Hello and welcome to PHP Alive and Kicking, brought to you by PHP Architect and made better by our partners at Displace. More about them later. This podcast explores the developments in PHP and what it's like to earn a living in PHP today. I'm one of your hosts, Mike Page, best known as Mike Page Dev, and I'm a developer at PHP Architect. And my co-host and is a long-time contributor to our magazine and now a fellow team member, Chris Miller. Say hi, Chris.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm good, thanks. This is a pre-recorded episode, and you can find us on YouTube. You can also find us in our Discord channel. If you come over there, me and Chris are in there all week, and there are some big names within our community that you can chat to all week long. We also have a little surprise for our listeners. We have a discount to our magazine. Chris throws up the code down the bottom there. There we go. So head over to the website, subscribe to the magazine, use Alive3, and you get, if I remember rightly, it's the first 3 months free, Chris?
It is. It's three months free.
Brilliant. Okay.
Of the digital subscription.
Yeah, not the printed one, the digital one. Yeah, of course. Not only do we have a magazine, we're also a have a conference that we run each year in the States. And that's it, PHP Tech. Tickets are now available for next year, so it'd be great to see some people travel over and see us there. Cool. So, Chris, who do we have joining us today?
I mean, we have a fellow PHP developer, freelance developer, Ash Allen. Hey, Ash, how you doing?
Hi, Ash.
Hi, all right.
So, we always start with exactly the same question, because it's great for getting to know the person and their story.
Yeah.
How did you get started in PHP?
Oh, right. Okay. So that's a good question. When I was at university, which was 2014 to 2018, I think it were, I was in one of my lessons, and it was a... can you edit this part out? I've just gone blurry.
Yeah.
I don't know what's happened. Is it going to come back?
Slowly.
There we are. There we are. Sorry about that. I'll start the question from the beginning again if you want. Yeah, so I was in university between 2014 to 2018. And while I was there, I had one of the classes called Interactive Applications. And I'd done a little bit of like Java and C++, C Sharp, stuff like that, and they never really clicked with me. I actually went to university because I wanted to become a teacher. And then I did this interactive applications module. We just had to like build something with PHP. And I was like, wow, there's something about it just clicked. I think it might be down, when I look back now, I think it's because doing C Sharp and C++, Java, stuff like that, we're mainly building like terminal applications, stuff like that. I didn't really see a use case for them. It was really hard for me to put into perspective, like, right, okay, I've learned to do this, but how does it fit into real life? But doing PHP, we actually built a web page. So it felt a bit more substantial. Like I could actually see what I built, and something clicked about the way that you wrote the code as well. I'm not saying PHP is better or worse than any other language, just from my head, it just worked better. So from there, I was looking for a job. For when I was finishing university, and it just so happened that a town that I wanted to move to, I got a recruiter got in touch with me and said, oh, there's a job in this town. I was like, oh, perfect. And that job was doing as a web developer using Laravel, which is a PHP framework. And it's kind of snowballed from there, really. I kind of fell into it almost, because it just so happened that the job that I wanted was the place I wanted to move to just had a job that happens to be using PHP. So maybe if they'd have been doing a different language, I might have been using a different language, but no regrets so far.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that sort of really helps with PHP, is that you immediately see the results of what you're doing. So you dive into it, you write some code, and it just works. And
yeah,
like a lot of other languages, it's an interpreted rather than compiled language. So you don't even have to sit there and wait for it to compile for 10 minutes first and then tell you you've got errors. It tells you instantly.
Yeah. That was definitely something that was a winner for me, because, like, I mean, I know when you're at university and you're first learning, there's probably things I was doing so wrong, it's unbelievable, but I was using like .NET to try and build applications. So we had to like build a PHP app and build the exact same app with .NET. And they were two modules that we'd done. And the .NET one, it just never felt the same. Like having to like wait for things to rebuild. And I'm sure if there's any .NET developers listening to me right now, they're going to turn around and say, you were just doing it wrong. And I probably was doing it wrong. I was, I'd not really been programming for more than a couple of weeks at that point, sort of thing. But it was, that, like I said, the PHP one, it just felt so much faster and easier. Maybe if I revisited .NET now, I'd have a competent opinion. I'm sure I would, but at the time, it clicked easiest for me.
And yeah, that is part of being a developer, is looking at the tools that you have and choosing the one that you like. And to take the analogy one step further, with PHP and C#, these days it is literally, do you want a blue-handled screwdriver or a red-handled screwdriver? They both do the same thing in slightly different ways. And it ends up with everybody getting on and communities growing. And part of the reason that we actually run this podcast is because we want to help to raise the profile of PHP as a viable option, and to combat that argument of PHP is dead. And we hate that phrase. And it comes from listening to Niall's talk. Mike actually heard Niall's talk at PHP UK, and he said, all people see when you hear PHP is dead is PHP dead.
Yeah.
So what he was saying, so it was a panel, and the question was, how do we bring in new developers into PHP? And his response was quite quick, is change the way you're presenting PHP to people. Stop using PHP isn't dead in your titles. Because only people that have got the bad taste of PHP in their mouth, they're only going to see the negative there. They're just going to see PHP is dead. And really interestingly, the last couple of weeks, I have seen so many posts on LinkedIn and some other places about PHP is dead, learn this PHP, where someone's saying every year someone else tells me to learn something else. And it's like, most people just can see PHP is dead, learn this instead. So that what we're trying to do, and what we'd like to do, is trying to raise the awareness of that's probably not the best way. When Noah said that, it really clicked. So I was sitting there listening and think, that makes so much sense. We need to try and get out there and do something. Stop using negative words when we're trying to promote PHP, because people are just seeing the negative words. And they're not seeing the benefits and not reading on, or they're not clicking on the video. The video where someone has posted saying, PHP is not dead, I made this cool thing. They're seeing PHP dead and they're carry on scrolling.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so if we change the way that we are presenting, the way we name things, that's where we came to the name of this podcast, as PHP Alive and Kicking. We want to use the positive words to try and push PHP and bring people in, bring people that have tried it years ago back and show them this is not just viable, as Chris says. I mean, let's face it, I don't know the exact percentage, Chris possibly does, but PHP is everywhere on the internet.
Yes.
Majority of the internet is PHP. Maybe that is just PHP. Maybe it's WordPress. Maybe it's Drupal or any of these other frameworks and things that are out there. They're all built in PHP. And at the end of the day, if you work within any of those, the other message we're trying to portray in PHP Architect is, it doesn't matter if you're a Laravel person specializing in Laravel, or whether it's Symfony or whether it's Drupal, you are a PHP developer at heart. At the end of the day, that's what you are. And we're trying to bring everyone together and sort of fight the corner of PHP. I mean, at the end of the day, it's 30 years old now. And just getting better, still getting better, still finding ways to get faster and better. So
and the thing is, we're also in a community where people as old as me in the community have literally been using it since it was released. You know, I was using PHP and V1. So 1995, I was writing PHP, which is
wow.
scary to think back that 30 years ago, I was writing in the same language that I still love today.
Yeah, that and just to contrast it as well, I wasn't even born when it was released.
And another contrast is I'm the same, probably roughly the same age as Chris, but I only started writing PHP 5 years ago. So I'm a baby as well in the development industry. I was did other things throughout my life until I realized that I quite enjoyed writing code.
Yeah.
And but quite similarly,
it's,
like
it's cool, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I still pinch myself today. It's like I literally sit here and write code most of the day, and that's what I do for a living.
I mean, I get paid for fixing bugs that I wrote, so.
Yeah, it's a win-win.
You got one to fix later on.
So, Ash, one of the things that you talk about a lot is freelancing and how you get into freelancing. If I remember rightly, haven't you recently released a book on that?
Yes, I have actually. I've actually got a copy of it here.
Look at that. Complete ready.
Not only have you got a book, but it looks cool. Which
thank you. I've got to say it's my wife. She designs all the book covers for me because I've got two other books as well, which was Battle Ready Laravel and Consuming APIs in Laravel. This one's the Web Dev's Guide to Freelancing, and she designed them all. I can't take credit for that. So I'll pass on the kind words. Thank you.
Yeah. So what is it that got you down the route of freelancing versus employment, and how did that story start?
That was a pure accident, and I'm actually quite amazed that it worked out the way it did. So when I was in my first, maybe second year of university, I can't remember when it were, we had a hub, like a business hub in our uni, and it was called, at the time it's called Northern Lights, now it's called Propeller, and they were like, they're like a place where you can go to if you're a graduate and you want to start a business or you want to freelance or anything like that, you can go to them, because a lot of universities that I've seen, I can't tar them on with the same brush kind of thing, they make the assumption you're going to go to uni, get your degree, go on to a job. So they kind of provided a way for like resources, mentoring, stuff like that, services to help people who didn't necessarily want to do that. So I can remember they came in that first or second year and did an entire presentation all about freelancing. And I'll be honest with you, I sat at the back of the lecture hall and I nearly fell asleep. I was like, I don't want to freelance. This isn't for me. Why would I ever want to do that? I want to go and be an employee and stuff like that. So I completely discredited it. Then in my second year of university, one of my lecturers sent me an email saying, one of the other departments is looking for a website making. You've done all right on your module where you're building something with PHP. Do you want to have a crack at it? Question said, do you want to have a crack at it? You get the general gist. So I was like, oh, I've never done anything like this before. And they said, oh, well, they'll be paying you and stuff. So I said, yeah, go on then. So I went and built the site, which is still there now. Is it my proudest site I've ever made? Absolutely not. It was the first one I've ever made. Anyone who can say they're proud of the first site is probably a liar. but I'm proud of it in the sense that I actually built it and it's still alive. So that's kind of good. It could look a lot better and function a lot better. The code could run a lot better. But then I got paid to like build something for somebody. And I was like, what? Like, because like I said, I've gone to university. I wanted to become a teacher. And I know it sounds really silly, and it sounds like I'm lying, but I didn't know being a web developer was a job. I thought that people went in to go and do like software engineering stuff, because you never really, there wasn't much emphasis on web development. It was all software engineering, bit of networking, bit of computer security. So I was like, I can get paid to like build things, and people want it, and I enjoy doing it. I was like, I don't get this. So I built that site and then contacted a couple of the family friends, stuff like that. And they were saying, oh, yeah, we're starting businesses. Do you reckon you could throw a site together? I was like, yeah. So I did them very cheap, like a couple of hundred quid, pounds, sorry, for any people in the UK. I did it very, very cheap. but I managed to build a portfolio. And again, I was like, well, people are paying me to like build things. And then after you've had into your portfolio, more people then getting in touch with me saying, oh, can you build me a site? And it just kind of spiraled from there. And then after I'd started at my full-time job in 2018, doing the Laravel development, I then started to realize there was a lot of like opportunities on the market for people wanting an extra pair of hands with Laravel development. Things like, oh, we've got a deadline coming up, can you come and help us? Or we've had a developer, he's since left, can you come and help us? They don't necessarily want a full-time employee. They don't want somebody who they've got to manage and do all the boring HR stuff and the accounting and all this kind of stuff. They just want somebody who can come in, fix things, build things, give them an invoice at the end of the month, and then that's it. And if they want to get rid of me later on, they can get rid of me. I'm cool with that, because that's you charge a slight bit of a premium to cover that with the freelancing. But yeah, it just snowballed from there, and I'm quite happy with how it's turned out so far. It's going relatively well. So
yeah, and I've actually seen your portfolio on your Ash Allen Design site, and some of those sites are really cool. I like the way that you've ended up with those designs.
Oh, thank you.
So I think that gives us a convenient moment for hearing from our partners over at Displace.
Yeah.
Thank you to our partners over at Displace Technologies. Building PHP applications is your passion. Managing cloud infrastructure shouldn't be your headache. Displace is your partner in cloud infrastructure orchestration, giving solo developers and small teams the tools and automation to deploy enterprise-grade Kubernetes clusters without the enterprise-grade complexity or cost. Their CLI tool streamlines everything from local development to fully managed cloud deployments on AWS, Azure, Google Cloud Platform, and more. Skip the steep learning curve of Docker, Kubernetes, and Terraform. Let their automation free you to focus on your core business without losing control of your infrastructure. Get started at displace.tech. That's displace.tech. And discover how the right tools can eliminate the need for a full DevOps team.
Thank you, Displace.
So, going back to your book, you have a separate website for that, which we can share the link for, web-dev-freelancing.com. What inspired you to write the book? What did you think you were filling the hole of?
So I see a lot of people who want to get into freelancing. And like I said, I was given a bit of a stepping stone to get there through the Northern Lights / Propeller hub. And I still use them to this day. Like, this still absolutely amazing. They still mentor me and helping me accounts and all that kind of stuff. But a lot of people don't have access to stuff like that. And I get a lot of emails, messages, all that kind of thing. People tweeting to me and stuff. I don't know if I can still say tweeting, posting. And they're saying things like, I want to get into freelancing, but I'm scared. Or I really want to get into it, but I'm not getting any clients. Where are you finding them and stuff? So I get people who, they've got that technical ability. Like, they know that they could build something, but they just don't know how to actually get into doing it and getting paid without being an employer. Employee. So I thought, well, if I keep getting asked about this, why not wrap it up into a book? I mean, yes, I could have given it away for free, and I do give some of it away for free and stuff like that, but at the same time, I've got to remember I've got to pay for my time, and that's why I've got to charge for it. But I genuinely think that there's a lot of people out there who can and do freelancing that are very good at it, but they just needed that little bit of a nudge just to get them going. Because I'm only speaking from the perspective of someone from the UK. I don't know what it's like in other countries, but in the UK, it is scary. You've got to do like self-assessments at the end of the year on how much you need to be paying tax and stuff. And you've got to be doing bookkeeping and make sure you've got contracts in place and stuff. When you're an employee, you don't really have that. It's kind of all dealt with for you. So the book was in place to try and give a bit of knowledge, not necessarily in depth, but a general overview across everything. Like, how do you get started? How do you get the right mindset? Because the mindset is a massive thing. A lot of people turn around, they'll say, I've not got a client. Oh God, I'm panicking. And that is a good reason to panic if you've got bills to pay. But it's trying to get into that mindset of, don't worry, it's not going to last. You are going to get clients stuff. And then after you've got past that stage, how are you going to get the clients? How are you going to keep them? Like, how are you going to retain the clients? To keep paying your monthly return or a yearly return or coming back for future projects that are completely separate? And I just enjoy helping people. The bonus is the fact I get paid for helping people, but I do genuinely get a massive sense of like fulfillment from knowing that people have been helped. Like, I've helped people get into freelancing, and when I get messages from people saying that, like, I just landed my first client, I've just got my first invoice paid and stuff, and I'm like, oh, like, that's cool. I love that. I love seeing other people succeed and stuff. So that's kind of why I got into it.
I think a lot of people sometimes underestimate how many different hats you need to put on when you freelance.
Mm-hmm.
I have freelanced, but not as a developer, in other areas. I've never done it full time. I've always done it alongside a full time job, because I was didn't put a lot of effort into sort of get myself out there, and things like that. But it's there is a lot of things you have to think about, and I now actually do a tax return every year, because I kind of keep myself employment status open just in case something ever happened. I used to be a theatre technician, sound and light design and technician. I still am. I still do it, but I do it as more of a hobby these days, rather than doing paid. So I kind of keep that open. But there's, especially in the UK, you have to think about, you've got to register with Inland Revenue to say that you are self-employed. It doesn't mean you've got to actually put in numbers every year, because there is a minimum amount, and I can't remember off the top of my head. So I know there's one of the questions in the self-assessment form. Most of the time, so I find that it's all filled in for me anyway, because I don't do any freelance stuff at the moment, haven't been doing enough to be able to go over the threshold to where I have to declare it. I can't remember what the threshold is at the moment, but the question, have you earned X amount in your freelance this year? You just carry on and you're pretty much done. But if you say yes, that's when you've got to go through, you've got to think about all your assets and things like that. I'm quite lucky, because I've my wife is actually an accountant, so she's on that side. So that really helped to try and get my head around how that worked. And I actually did do an accounting night school course, 1 year accounting, many moons ago. That was a long time ago. So again, I've had a bit of a background, but there's people that would be interested in doing this. I mean, being your own boss sounds amazing. My dad was self-employed and had his own company, so I saw what it was like from that side of things. But you do have to bear in mind, there's so many different hats you have to put on when you're running. Run your own. If you're just freelancing, as you say, the accounting and all those sorts of things, advertisements, keep everything. So it's not just, you're not going to just be sitting there all day writing code. There is other admin stuff you have to do. And that's a bit that people don't like. But I think if you really want to be able to work for yourself, if the desire is there, that the benefits are more than the downsides of having to do all that extra work.
And I think that's one of the big differences between freelance and contractor, that with a contractor, you're going from company to company to company, and it's usually a fixed term contract. You know how much you're going to get and all of that, which has its benefits. But the difference between that and employment is that you do all the hard work of the tax anyway. Whereas freelance, you do all of the hard work of the tax, but you also reap all of the benefits of literally being able to choose who you work with, where you work, when you work, and for how long. It wasn't that long ago that I was actually in your Discord talking in one of the channels you've got in there. the big wins, where I was talking about landing a contract for creating content for a company. And that actually developed into a slightly different contract where I actually was then employed to develop for them because they discovered that I could develop in multiple languages.
Oh, nice, nice.
And that ended up being an interesting contract to work on. And it's the growth around freelance is the amount of people you end up talking to and being in touch with that then remain in contact with you is.
Yeah.
And for me, it's thinking back for 25 years, I don't think there are many customers that I've had in that 25 years that haven't kept in touch with me, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's sweet. That's sweet. Mm. But yeah, I mean, like you're saying about them keeping in touch. I mean, I worked with a client, I think 6 years ago, I think it were. And I just got a message from yesterday saying he's got a new project coming up. Do you want to jump on board for even if it's just a couple of days a week or something like that, just to like kind of help out? I've got to reply to him and say I've not got any availability at the moment. So, but it just goes to prove, though, that you can get the return of the people coming back to you, which is really nice because you've built that relationship. Because working with somebody for the first time, it's really nerve-wracking sometimes because you don't know what they're going to be like. Are they going to pay on time? Are they going to be a horrible team to work with? But after you build that relationship with somebody, you keep coming back to them, you build rapport with them. It's quite nice, but you don't stick around for that long that you get bored, because that's one of the things that I found with my, when I was doing full-time employment and part-time freelancing, I didn't like the fact that on the full-time employment, I was always working the same project all the time. And after a while, it just becomes, you go from building cool features every day to just maintenance, bug fixes, let's go and upgrade Laravel today, let's go. And it kind of loses its appeal. Whereas with the freelancing that I was doing part-time, like at the weekends and the evenings, I was constantly jumping on new projects all the time, and it was keeping that kind of that spark alive, if you will, sort of thing. So that's why I ended up making the jump to doing it full-time freelancing in 2022, one of the years, whatever year it was. It was about 4 years ago or something. And I get to jump around all the time. It's really fun. Like, you never get bored, because just as you get to that point where the project's getting boring, the contract comes to an end, you move on somewhere else or something, or you're just building a site and then moving on. So only a few weeks or a few months work, and then you don't stick around long enough to get bored.
I seem to have a sort of quirk in freelancing projects where companies will contact me and it's like, our site isn't working like we want it to, help. And the first thing I do is go in and it's like, yeah, okay, so firstly, you're on Laravel 3. That's probably a problem. secondly, PHP 4 has been out of service forever. And what, have you ever heard of a test? And I love those kind of ones because I get to go, yeah, let's just work out what the hell you were actually trying to do and then make it happen. And most of the time you're looking at code and you can see the evolution of the code from different people working on it. Mm-hmm. And what I try to do at the end of it is leave them with a document that says, this is how to continue adding to this project. So they end up with a fully fixed system brought up to date at whatever that point happens to be. So now it'd be PHP 8.4 and Laravel 12 or whatever framework. Mm-hmm. And then leave them with a guide on, here is where your database things are, here is how you're accessing controllers properly and varying other things.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time people come back and say, that document saved us hours on trying to work out a bug later on.
Yeah. That's quite a good idea. I've done little bits of handover documentation like that, but I've never thought about doing it as in-depth as that, as like a here's where to go in the future. I'm stealing that idea. Thank you, Chris.
Go for it. It works really well by leaving it with them. It's like you're reminding them of the work that went into getting to the point that they're at. And effectively, I mean, none of my clients are on this call. Effectively, you say, don't screw it up again. And so one of the other areas that you've written books on is Laravel. And One of the ones that is honestly my second favorite book of all time, Battle Ready Laravel.
Can I ask what your first is?
My first is actually Matt Stauffer's book on Laravel.
That's fair.
I mean, he has a slight advantage. He seems to be followed by the entire universe. So,
yeah.
But that book, to me, when I first read it, was it gave me some hints that even with decades of experience of working with PHP, I learned a lot from that. And what sort of led to you writing that one?
So going back to, like I said, before I went to university, I wanted to be a teacher. So I get like a massive kick out of helping people. So I started my blog on my site, and I actually mainly started it as a marketing tool. That's all it was. That's all it was intended to be, at least at the beginning. And it was a marketing tool to try and get like web design clients. I don't actually do web design anymore. It's more web development. But while I was writing, I kept noticing that like I was getting more and more people coming to the blog. I was like, oh, it's doing all right at this. And then I had the idea of writing a free ebook called The Clean Coder's Guide to Laravel, which I've actually written about this in my web dev's guide to freelancing book, but I'll let everyone else know. Some people might have noticed the free ebook was actually just five of my blog posts that were performing well at the time wrapped up into a PDF. I saw the idea online of someone saying to do that, and I basically put, if you sign up to my newsletter, you get a free ebook. So again, I'd done it purely as a marketing thing to try and get people to sign up to my newsletter so I can try and eventually sell my services to you. And It started doing quite well. And then Pavlos, I'm really sorry if I said your name wrong there, but Pavlos from Laravel Daily, he made a video about the free ebook. And then I woke up in the morning and I thought I'd been spammed or something. I thought I was getting attacked because my subscriptions to my newsletter had gone from like one every 3 or 4 days to I think I'd had like 200 overnight or something. And I was like, oh no. I thought there was a bug or something going on. And I realized they were all legit. And I was like, whoa, right, wow. So this has actually got a bit of traction here. So I then started pitching ideas to people saying like, if I was to do something similar to this, but more substantial and charge for it, would you be interested in buying it? Because I, as much as I like being a developer and stuff, I don't want to code every single day. It gets a bit tedious after a while. I like writing. So I like to split up my time. So I thought to myself, I'm going to see if I can write a book. It'll diversify my income. And also it'll act as another marketing tool. So I wrote the book, Barrier Laravel. It's sold, I think, about 1,300 or 1,400 copies since 2022, I think it is, October 2022. And it actually works as a fantastic marketing tool because I now do some freelancing for Fathom Analytics, and I got that directly off the back of the book. Jack Ellis from Fathom got in touch with me and said, like, I've read your book, do you want to come work with us? And I actually said no to him at first. And then a couple of years later, he came back to me and said, what about now? And I was like, oh, you know what? Go on. I didn't want to say no at the time. I just really enjoyed the contracts I was working on. Sorry. And then that contract's come to an end. And Jack got in touch. I was like, yeah, go on then. And I've been working on a freelance basis with them for the past year or so, which has been sweet because it's mind-blowing the amount of stuff that you've got to think about when working at such a huge scale. But yeah, sorry, I got off on a bit of a tangent there, but
no, that's absolutely fine. So we've talked to some other people about the same sort of things, about the getting yourself out there in the community, getting yourself known a bit. Yeah, you're talking to other PHP developers, but you never know what that relationship can turn into. We've got clients from Eric and John meeting people or listening to the podcast, and they're developers themselves, but they might want some extra help on the project.
Yeah.
And I think that's one that never underestimate the power of going to things like conferences or meetup groups and chatting to someone. I know. Absolutely. It's not easy. I find that sort of thing really, really difficult. And we've talked about it on quite a few of the episodes, but one of the motivations for this podcast was to help me get over the fear of talking to people, meeting new people, and try and get out there a little bit more. Everyone keeps bugging me to try and put in some talks at conferences. We'll see. I might have put in a few for PHP Tech next year. We'll see if they get selected. But we'll... but yeah, I mean, the meeting people, that networking. I'm trying to remember. Someone was not using the word network, and they used something else when we were talking about this. I can't remember what they said, but it was less formal. So networking feels really, really formal. But from my experience with, for example, PHP Tech, I'm going to say it again. I have a vested interest. It's our conference. I've been twice now, but the sort of welcoming family feel I received when I turned up, and I was like one of a handful of like people from Europe, for example, not just the UK, from Europe, because it's right in the center of, well, it was for the last 2 years and it will be next year. It's in Chicago, so it's right in the sort of center of the US, and the majority of people there are US, but everyone was very welcoming. And you just get starting to chat to people, and those relationships, you never know where they go down the road. And
yeah,
even just getting involved in online communities, like, for example, joining our Discord, joining your Discord. This is why I work for PHP Architect now, because I was in their Discord and I talked. PHP a lot. I was in there normally giving talking about other things or asking a lot of questions. But Eric and John started to know who I was, recognized my name, and then when I was told I was being made redundant last January, that was that was my New Year's present, the first day back in the office, and I was told I was being made redundant last year. I literally walked out of the boss's office, sat on my computer, and went straight onto our Discord, or what was the pitch? Was it the ugly Discord still then? Probably. I can't remember. Now I think we had moved over to just the PHP Architect Discord by then. I just went into the job section and just said, anyone here is there anything? I'm looking. I need to find my new position. And that's kind of Eric then contacted me, and it all just fell into place. Some of it is like being in the right place at the right time, but
100%.
If you try and find your way out of your comfort zones, get out there, let people know who you are, and things will start to fall into place. And yeah, it's great to hear it's worked quite nicely for you.
It's almost like talking to people opens doors, and you know, puts you in places that you want to be.
Yeah, there's nothing new about this. People have been saying it for years and years. This is how it works. But in our industry, you find a lot of people that have difficulties getting out there and talking to people.
A lot of people actually don't believe me. But when I first started doing public speaking, I really hated the idea of public speaking about tech. Give me a subject I was comfortable speaking publicly about and I was fine. But tech at the time, it's like, but I'm just me. I don't know anything. And I was thrown in at the deep end by the organizer of School of Code. One of the boot camps in the UK, unfortunately, now has closed. And they sort of said, you're going here. You're speaking on React and what's new in React. And you're speaking for 10 minutes. Have fun. And that was the way that they threw me into it. So I went and I spoke about React. And then this guy was sitting there asking me questions. And it was like, so I was giving answers about it. And then anyway, talking to him afterwards, it turns out that he wrote React. And so, yes, my introduction to speaking and answering questions was by the developer of the framework that I just used. It's like, okay, so the fact that I'm getting asked questions by the framework's creator, is this a good thing or a bad thing? Turns out it was a good thing, and he was asking about my way of using it. Because he loves to hear different, excuse me, different people's use cases for React and how they use the functions that are available to them. I mean, at the time, the idea of a hook was brand new. And
I've never used React, so I can't comment, sorry.
Right, so you've never used React. You're going to tell me you use Vue now, aren't you?
Yeah.
It's a good job I like Vue as well, then.
I don't like either of them. Livewire. All the way.
He's Livewire, you know. Old school HTML. Come on, keep up.
I can do HTML. In fact, I'm fairly good with CSS. I did get quite handy at CSS in my last role. Just because we had one client in my last role where they gave me the design and it had to be pixel perfect.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, pixel perfect. So I have sat there, and we've joked about this before, with a ruler. Going from the PDF on one screen to the screen I'm developing on, going, I'm sure that looks right. And then send it off, and goes, no, it's one pixel out. So what? How is it a pixel out? It looks exactly the same.
Do you know my favorite way of fixing things that are one pixel out is you sit there, you switch to VS Code or whatever your editor happens to be, you type a comment because the person doesn't know what you're doing, switch back, refresh the screen and say, is that better? Usually they'll say yes.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a life tip there. Definitely, that's from experience.
Most of the time, people that are asking for pixel perfect, unless they are designers or developers themselves, are asking to feel useful. They're asking because they want to put something into the process. It's like, I've got this idea and I want it exactly right, but they don't actually know what exactly right looks like in code. Mm. So it's part of the being part of the process.
Yeah, and I mean, also pixel perfect. Oh, sorry, after you.
In this incident that I'm talking about, it was the designer part of the company that kept coming back and saying that that's not right.
You can't get away with that. Then I've tried. Ash, you also wrote a third book. It almost seems like you like writing or something.
I do.
Consuming APIs in Laravel.
Yes.
So one of the things that I find really complicated with APIs in Laravel is trusting that the API does what they say it's going to do.
Yes.
Do you answer that question in the book?
I want to say yeah.
Good answer.
I'm pretty confident if you were to read it from back to front that yes, you would know how to ensure the fact it's acting how they say it's going to act, and also to make sure it continues to act the way it's supposed to act. And the reason I separate those two is because the very first time I built an API integration that wasn't for a job, it was I have a Laravel package called Laravel Exchange Rates, and it was just something I just made just to practice building API integrations stuff. And it makes an API call to an exchange rates API, so you can convert currencies between two currencies, multiple currencies, like from pounds to euros or something. Mm-hmm. And I had tests that were set up to be using mocked responses. For anyone who's not familiar with a mocked response, is like, I know that I'm expecting this very specific JSON back from the API. So in my test, I will just test that my integration reacts properly to having this JSON. So that was all perfect. My tests were all passing. Woohoo! The day, a few months after, one morning, I got loads of issues started to open up on the GitHub repo, and they were saying, "Yeah, it's broken, it doesn't work." And I was like, what do you mean it doesn't work? All tests are passing. So, and it turns out that the API had been bought by a company. Don't want to name them because I can't actually know who they are. I don't remember who they are. But when they'd bought it, they'd changed the structure of the API response to match the other APIs. They seem to have like a tendency to go around buying up exchange rate APIs, and they kind of will eventually bring them under their own umbrella. There was no announcements. There was no breaking changes. There was no like version numbers. It was just breaking changes all around. And at that point, I was like, oh, right, okay. Maybe I do actually need to hit the API in my test just once, just to make sure that when it hits the API that it is actually returning what it's supposed to. Didn't really like doing it, but that's how I got to make sure it continues to act how I expected it to act. But yeah, building the API integrations like that, I think if you read the book, it'll teach how to use the mocked responses and also how to make, or should I say, when to make actual API calls. You don't want to send API calls in your test at every single endpoint because it's slow. It's just cumbersome. There's so much setup that needs to go into it and stuff. You don't want to do that. And yeah, I think with all the cool things that are in Saloon, which is what the book's about, it's a PHP package called Saloon, built by Sam Carré. And Sam, I'm really sorry if I said your last name wrong. I think it's Carré. It's got loads of like built-in things to make sure that it's acting the way you expect it to act and you can respond to it, because there's nothing worse. We've all experienced it of you getting back a response for an API, HTTP status 200, and then the contents of the API is error.
You're like, oh, God.
So did it work or did it not work? So
it successfully failed.
Yeah, exactly. So it teaches you how to respond to those kind of scenarios and how to determine, is it actually an error or like does it just think it's an error and stuff? So yeah, I'd recommend checking out, but I'm a bit biased though, so there's no point asking me.
So interestingly, going back a few years, for a short amount of time, a third party that I integrated with made a mistake in their API when they did an update and they'd changed all 200s to 400. So all of the successfuls were errors.
I hope that was fixed relatively fast.
Oh, it was done within a day once they realized what they'd done. It was like, but we shouldn't have this many.
Now, I've recently had the exact issue you were just saying there, Ash, about it was a project I was working on. One of the first things I did with PHP Architect, and I was integrating an API. And I'm sitting there, I've checked it's 200, everything's working fine. And then I'm being told, oh, no, that didn't work, that failed. So, but it didn't. And then I look even deeper, and I'm like, so you're sending 200 on everything. Yeah, mm-hmm. The actual code is in the body.
Yep.
Okay. And then we try to sort of go back to them and say, do you know that's not really the best way to do an API? This is how we recommend. We can't change it. There's too many people using the API now. And no one's told you this. It's scary how many people out there don't understand. It's not just how APIs work, but how the HTTP codes work.
Yeah.
It's quite fascinating how people don't even think about that, and they don't know what a 500 is or all the normal usual ones that you might find, or a 404 and all those. It's like, no, just send a 200 for everything.
Yeah.
And we'll have our custom codes, our own custom error codes that we'll put in the body for you.
Yep. Which then you've got to go and check the API documentation to figure out what that code meant.
I've had an integration where not only is it like just they'll give you a code which makes sense if it's HTTP code. Okay, I can get my head around that. But the ones that then give you custom codes that mean absolutely nothing, but in the context of that, with a custom code for a message, it's like, just, you're making me go to a separate site to find that. Give me the information in the API, please.
Yep.
And then I've had another one that actually this year on a personal project where I'm consuming one an API, and they changed the URL.
Like, without,
no warning at all. And I just woke up to some errors, honey badger errors, saying that the job failed that runs overnight to consume that API and bring the data in. I'm like, why is it failing all of a sudden? And I look into it and then find, when I go onto the website, there was something to say that this is now the URL you need to go to, but there was no, I suppose, I don't know, how would they actually let us know? Because I don't have any newsletter with them or anything like that. It's just like, just change the URL just all of a sudden on us. It's like, okay, thanks for that.
I mean, on the bright side, at least it was just changing the URL and not changing the URL and all the structure for the request and everything else. So it was a, like a one line change, maybe, but still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just, I think sometimes if you're building like an integration for an app and you're building it for a client, and then your app stops working because their API's changed, it looks bad on you sometimes, mm-hmm. as well. Yep. And like, you'll get a client saying, I've had it in the past of, this isn't working, what have you done wrong? I'm like, whoa. I've not done anything. And then you've got to go and fix it. And you can usually end up making them appeasing them a little bit more. But at the time, it looks like you've messed up. But mm-hmm. stuff you can do if the third party's changed, is there? So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My favorite route of handling that one is expert in the room. I get somebody else to explain that it's a third party.
Oh.
Because if I'm explaining it, it's me passing the buck. But if I call you and say, Ash, this is what happened. Do me a favor. Join me on this meeting. I've called you as a consultant. What's happening is I've brought somebody else in to explain the problem for me.
That's actually a really good idea. I never thought about that. I'm stealing that one as well, Chris.
Chris, stop giving away all your secrets.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think if I've got it in any of the articles that are coming up for PHP Tech.
PHP Tech, you obviously like writing, Ash, and forgive me if you already have written for the magazine, but have you done any articles for our magazine before?
Yeah, I've actually, yeah. It was for the June 2024 edition, I think it were. It was a guide to serialization in PHP.
Ah, yes, nice. I remember reading that one. I'm fairly good at remembering the articles, but I don't remember the people that write them. I'm afraid I've never been good with names, so I'll forget your name as soon as we come off this call. So, but yeah, now I remember that article now. In fact, I might have been the one that was last year. Yeah, I think I'm the one that reviewed that for the magazine. So all the developers over at PHP Architect, we review the articles before they go into the magazine as well. So
which makes it really easy for mine to go in, because I just review my own.
You're not allowed to. You're being told. As soon as we see that, we take it off of someone else to read it, because we know you're cheating there. We go through, we just look for some of it, because the editor of the actual magazine doesn't have the technical knowledge. So we go for it with a technical mind, just make sure there's nothing missed, like the semicolon here and there might be missed or just making sure some of the language, because we do have people that write that English isn't their first language. So just making sure their translations make sense to an English reader. So we do go for, I think I might have actually, that does sound familiar. I think I might have reviewed that one.
Yeah, it was literally just about how to serialize data, what serialized data is, how to unserialize it. Deserialize, unserialize? I don't know what the correct term is, but it's in the article.
I think they're interchangeable these days. They both mean the same thing.
Mm.
Oh, that doesn't fair enough. Then that's easier.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a fun article to write, to be fair, because I think it's something that no matter if you realize it or not, I think everyone touches serialization in their apps. Just like the same reason I'd written that APIs book, everyone touches an API integration at some point. I've never worked with anyone who's not done an API integration. But
I've worked with people who've refused to do any more. I mean, I find it funny when you are trying to integrate APIs and you're literally trying to guess what their responses are because they haven't documented it. And then you end up writing tests and they change them. And it's like, the biggest headache of any enterprise developer is the APIs you have to integrate with.
Yep. I have definitely found that.
Yeah. If you haven't written it yourself, you can't always trust it.
Have you seen my code? You can't trust it if I've written it.
I know. I know. I know. I was staring at your code last night and going, Why is this not working? Oh, hang on. Chris wrote this. Right, he can fix that tomorrow.
The test is correct. It's the code that's wrong.
Yeah, but you wrote the code, not the test.
That's the problem.
So, yes. It's a difficult one, APIs, I think. I haven't come across any so far that I haven't had issues when I first started using them. And you get to learn their quirks, but then they change, as you say, things. I had another one where I was basically told, yeah, this is all going to be the same as this other endpoint. It's exactly the same. It works the same way. And I do it, and then we can't work out why it's not working. And the client's going, this isn't working. What you've done is, but I've done exactly this. I've just copied the same. You've said it's exactly the same. And he's gone to third party and goes, yeah, it's exactly the same. And then we realize, no, the body's formatted slightly different.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, well, that's why it doesn't work. The body's different.
I'm convinced. I've tried to figure out why this might be, because I completely agree with you. Everything you just said then, it happens like almost every API I work with. The only thing I can think of is that it's different people working on different endpoints over spans of years and years and years, and
exactly.
And like conventions being slightly changed but not quite followed and stuff. And I think sometimes lack of processes and like really rigorous like QA in place to make sure that it like, don't return an error in one but errors in the other one, or message in one and now MSG, like keep them consistent. And I think sometimes when a developer is building a single endpoint, their mind is solely on that endpoint, and they're like, well, I wrote it, I know how it works, but nobody else does. It's somebody coming at it from a completely different angle. You just expect that every endpoint will follow the same conventions. And I think you can see that with web pages as well sometimes. Silly little things like, let's say we have a message saying user created successfully when someone's been created. You'll see on some pages it'll have a full stop at the end. Or some of them, it'll have an exclamation mark at the end. Or some of them will have an exclamation mark or a full stop. And you can kind of see how different conventions that, even though it's such a small little piece, hasn't been followed all the way through.
I better check that because it's probably what mood I'm in on different days. I've written it differently. Use different ones. I'm going to have to check that out. That's got me thinking. I've got, oh God, what did I put in that notice? How did I write that one?
How many exclamations did you put on the exception? It's usually one for me.
Oh dear. Yeah, I might have to go back and check that. Anyway, let's move on to a bit of a... Actually, I don't know if we prepped him for this question.
No, we didn't. We never do.
So this is going to put you on the spot a bit. So one of the big things we're trying to do here is to highlight some of the cool stuff, new things that's coming into PHP, into our world. What at the moment is exciting you about PHP and working within PHP?
Oh, what's exciting me?
Apart from just paying your bills.
I mean, that is always a winner. Let me think. I think that there is some cool stuff coming up with PHP 8.5 that I'm quite looking forward to using. One of them being the, I know it seems like quite a controversial subject when it's like mentioned a lot at the moment, but the pipe operator.
Yeah.
I quite like the look of it. I'm not going to admit that on some like Twitter or Reddit because I might get chewed up for saying that. But another thing that I quite like the look of is I've not actually looked at it, like pulled it down to machine locally, but I've had a quick look through the documentation online, and it's a Tempest PHP that's been built by Brent. I think I've said his name right.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I've not actually used it, so I can't comment on it, but it looks really nice. I really like the way that it's kind of making use of a lot of like attributes and things like that, and in it, from looking at it, it looks like things like models have got they've got like attributes on them, say like, oh, this will be a number between 1 to 20, it'll never be negative, or this is a non-empty string for the name of the user, just little things like that. I kind of think, oh wow, that's nice. Even if I don't end up using a Tempest or anything, I'm gonna pull it down to try it out locally, and I think it might be something that you can nitpick little bits of it, and maybe I can use it in my Laravel code. And of course, I can't say that Laravel isn't exciting. There's a heck of a lot going on in the Laravel world at the moment, a bit too much to even keep up with at the moment, because quite a lot of it doesn't necessarily apply like to me, because sometimes I'm at the whim of clients and stuff. So if there's a new tool that comes out, I don't always get to mess around with that new tool unless the client needs that tool. But yeah, there's some sweet stuff happening in the Laravel world as well. Mm-hmm. And another one that I've kind of seen, not used it yet, but I think I'm going to be using it for a project coming up soon, is a FrankenPHP as well, which seems to be snowballing and just getting bigger and bigger and stuff. This will be something that's very new to me, because messing around with like DevOps things, it's not my cup of tea. I know enough to get by, but it's not like I'm not an expert in it. So I'd be very interested to see how I get on with using FrankenPHP. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming I've said that right. I think that's how it's pronounced, but yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right. Well, talking about trying to keep up to date, don't forget we've got our magazine. This is to everyone out there, and we've got our discount code there to I've clicked on the wrong one. I've knocked my mouse. I knocked my mouse. Oh well, never mind. I had it already ready, and I must have knocked it to the one above it.
I mean, yeah. You just gave another shout out to our conference, so it's cool.
Well, I'm doing that all in the debrief to finish up here. But Alive 3, go down and get the first 3 months of the digital copy free of charge, and that is a really, really helpful way to try and keep up to date. And listen to me. I quite like listening to podcasts. A big one for me was the Eric and John's podcast, which was the PHP Ugly. Now it's the PHP Architect one, on the same YouTube channel as this is being released on. They always talk about things that are coming up. So that's good. And then keep listening to us, because we're going to be talking about all the new stuff that's coming out. We're going to bring people on that really know their stuff about those sorts of things. So keep your eyes open on who we're getting in to talk to. So we've got some exciting episodes hopefully coming up. And conferences is a good way to go and try and go and keep up with things, but also for your networking. That's the word I'm looking for. Networking. Couldn't remember the word. Okay. Well, I think we're getting to the end for today. So thank you very much, Ash, for taking some time out of your day today to have a chat with us about how you earn your living within this wonderful world of PHP. Definitely recommend your books. So get over there and check out the books. I think I might be having a look at a couple of them myself, if I haven't already bought them. And just I have a habit of buying books and then not reading them. But
I do the exact same thing, don't worry.
So I do have I have quite a few books I still haven't finished reading. So I do need to go and see what I've actually purchased, because I might have already got one of yours. I've got a funny feeling the Laravel one I might have that. But I'll have a look.
Yeah. Battle Ready Laravel seems by far the most popular, because it's like a general purpose, whereas consuming APIs is very specific to APIs.
Yeah, well, yeah, of course. So one of the things I did forget to mention, though, at the beginning of the show, is that we now have swag. We have a shop. I say now. I'm not sure when this episode is coming out, so it might be old news by then. But we do have a swag store where you can get all sorts of cool T-shirts. There's mugs, baseball hat. I think there's a bucket hat on there now as well. So yeah, go over there and get some merch. Great. Thank you very much again for your time today. We'll call it a day.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, that's okay. It's been fun. It's been interesting. It's always good to get to speak to someone new within the community. So that's one of the goals of this show, is trying to bring other people to the forefront and just chatting to people. Just chatting to see how they get, how they live in the world of PHP. Well, thank you very much, and thank you very much, everyone, for watching or listening. If you're listening to the audio, if you are listening to the audio, get to the YouTube channel and like and subscribe and jump into our Discord channel. We're me and Chris are in there all week. We can ask questions, and you'll see all sorts of people in there. People for, in the internals that work on the actual language we're using here, and there's release managers, there's package maintainers. That's the word, maintainers in there. Lots of people in there. So hope to see people in there soon. All right, take care, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Sweet.